The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
I'm Alan McIntyre with the Exodus Media Network, and today I'm going to be interviewing Lisa Watson from Kansas City. Lisa is associated with WatsonSpeaking.com. You're the founder of a free market education corporation. So let's look at some of your past affiliations. You were on the national board of the ACLU, affirmative action officer for the ACLU, chair of racial justice and task force, ACLU, Planned Parenthood intern, president of the Kansas City ACLU, former Hillary Clinton campaign volunteer, 2008, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Former union steward.
Correct.
All right. And you describe yourself as a former liberal turned free market education activist, correct?
Yes. That's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Former feminist.
Yes.
Former agnostic, atheist, and evolutionist.
Correct.
Former radical liberal.
Yes.
Formerly non-patriotic.
Sort of.
Well, Lisa, it's obvious that you have quite a radical liberal leftist resume, pretty extensive.
Yes, yes, unfortunately.
Well, but you've made a journey.
Yes.
And you're no longer that person.
Correct. It's been a process.
It's been a process. Okay, well, Lisa, kind of tell us what you're doing nowadays. What are you doing nowadays?
Well, right now, I've made a radical shift. And I believe that you just laid out for your audience very succinctly where I came from and where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
I started out in Kansas City, Midwestern, pretty typical, not unsimilar to many of the cities in Ohio. And I had an unremarkable childhood. I actually ended up moving to Los Angeles for college. And in college, I actually got exposed to a lot of ideas that I was not familiar with. One of the ideas was that God did not create people, but that people had created God. That actually put me into a lot of doubt and confusion regarding what I believed. I became an agnostic, and then later I became an atheist. Not long after that, I was on that typical tour to become one of those social justice warriors that we're all become familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how I ended up step by step going deeper and deeper into the left. I actually had a divine appointment. That's what began the journey to lead me out of a lot of the beliefs, a lot of the deception. And at the end of the journey, I started doing an autopsy over how did I get here? What happened to me? And I actually traced it back to the education system. And that's when I realized that a lot of the social problems that we're struggling with, they're actually rooted in the education system. So I was looking back at that adage that we're all familiar with that goes, if you're not a part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to admit, I'm part of the problem. So I started seeking this way almost to have atonement, repentance. What could I do to make up for the things that I had done in the past? And I thought that I needed to start working on the education system. Some of it, some political people are attracted to because I am now speaking a somewhat more conservative dialogue. The rhetoric is now more conservative. But across the board, the education system needs to be addressed. We can address it in ways that I hope even liberals can relate to. If I'm looking at a lot of the economic problems that we're having in America, if I'm speaking to the conservatives, I hear a lot of conversations about anti-welfare. But because I came from the left, I also can relate to anti-poverty programs. So I started explaining that we can build a bridge. The same people that are against welfare need to look at the education system in terms of how it can be used as an anti-poverty program.
Absolutely.
If people are being educated, then they won't need welfare.
Right.
Well, another term that was very, that I'm familiar with on both sides is the school-to-prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once again, if people were getting a proper education, then we could sever the school-to-prison pipeline. So this should be language that people on both sides of the aisle can relate to.
Absolutely.
So the people that are not there for an agenda, the people that are there because they really love the country, those people should be willing to get together. So again, let me give an example. If I'm talking to a black audience, I can start using the language of education in terms of, look at what black people did starting in the 1830s when they started forming the HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, after about 100 years, they had over 100 black founded historically black colleges and universities. And I thought, if we can build colleges and universities, why can't we build K-12 education?
Absolutely.
Look at the vision that they had to have. What were their building blocks? Much less than what we have today. But today we have the internet, mm-hmm. we have curriculum, mm-hmm. and we actually have infrastructure. So a little seed of an idea, and it was divinely inspired, a seed of an idea got planted where I started looking at the churches that we have. Well, churches are infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you look back through American history, you will realize we built a network of schools that were one-room schoolhouses. This nation was founded in the one-room schoolhouse. Well, every one of those one-room schoolhouses were churches.
Let me ask you a question. You know, today with modernity and modern technology, we seem to be much more stagnant than what we were, for example, in the 1830s. Why is that?
Well, some of it is that we just got locked into the wrong model. Everything is about a model. Mm-hmm. So now let's look at technology. If I go to anyone and say, show me your television in your house, it doesn't look the same as it did 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're not using the same television as 50 years ago. We're not using the same phone as 50 years ago. We're not driving the same cars as 50 years ago. But we're still using the same education model as 100 years ago.
Wow.
So all I'm trying to do is disrupt the education industry. Another paradigm.
So you want market disruption?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I want market disruption.
Absolutely.
If we look at what happened with, let's just say, I'm going to give a quiz.
Okay.
Someone gave me this quiz and I actually stole it. And they asked a question of the audience. Can you name the largest hotel chain in the world? And everyone starts saying, Hilton, Marriott. Then he says, can you name the largest taxi company in the world? And everyone says, Yellow Cab. And then he says, can you name the largest movie theater in the world? And everyone says, AMC. And then he says, wrong, wrong, wrong. The largest hotel chain is now Airbnb, and they don't own any hotel rooms. The largest taxi company is now Uber, and they don't own any cars. And the largest movie theater is now Netflix, and they don't own any theaters. So they've been disrupted. And that's what we can do to the education system.
A term that I made up and that I use quite often is political market disruption.
Correct.
And that's what my goal is with the Exodus Project, is to have political market disruption so that we can kind of disrupt this monopoly that the left has had on the black community and that they also have on millennials.
Well, what we have to do is we can definitely talk about disruption, but we have to say, is the plan to disrupt, to go in and use the left's model? The left's model is to go through litigation. That's what they do. To go through the government, to go through legislation, to go through governor's offices, the mayor's offices, and school districts and school boards. No, we can't use the tools of socialism to defeat socialism.
Right.
We have to use the tools of capitalism to defeat
Absolutely.
Socialism.
Well
so
put.
I want a model where I don't have to have one protest. I don't have to have any legislation. I don't have to have any union negotiations. I create a model of capitalism that is so attractive, like the Lord said, be a city on the hill, and then people will be drawn to it.
So you currently have that model?
Oh, I absolutely have that model.
You can't share it with us today?
Not today.
That's okay.
I'm going through a little bit of a, technically, I'm going through a patent process.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But I do have a piece of the puzzle that we can share. So it's a two-pronged process. One of them is actually so simple. Everything about this is deceptively simple. So let me give you an example. In the urban core of every city in America, there are some pastors who actually have schools. Have you heard of that before? Yes, it's not uncommon. But what we're doing is we're currently in a tug of war with the public schools. Well, the best way to win a tug of war, let go of the rope.
So they can just fall.
Let them fall. Call up the pastor and say, do you need any help? So this piece of the puzzle I actually call citizen teachers. So now I'm going to give another parallel. 20 years ago, and I'm going to use the industry of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, we knew what a journalist looked like. They went to college. They got a degree in broadcasting. They worked for a magazine, a newspaper, or a television station. That's not what journalism looks like today.
Bloggers.
Evidence of it.
Right.
Right now, we have citizen journalists.
Absolutely.
I am saying we can have citizen teachers. So let's just say I call up Pastor Jenkins and his little school in the urban core, and I say, Pastor Jenkins, I'm a specialist in the NRA and the Second Amendment. I'd love to come in and be a teacher for a day in your classroom. I'll donate my time. I may come in once a month. Do you think that that would help him? Would that help alleviate some of his employee costs? So now the next person, I'm a specialist in marriage. I would love to come in and teach your kids about marriage, where it came from, biblical marriage. I could donate my time once a month. Okay. You see where I'm going?
Absolutely.
Slowly over time, we make a list of about, I have a list of 12 topics that I feel like whenever I go to conservative.
And we kind of reduce the burden of cost.
We're reducing the burden of cost.
Yeah.
Now we're driving down market costs.
Mm-hmm.
But when he can drive down his tuition, that's more people that can now afford.
Absolutely.
To transition their children from darkness to light.
And I recently met a gentleman who is a plumber and has been a plumber for quite some time, and he's willing to volunteer his time to teach plumbing. So the people and the resources are out there.
Right. Now, think about how simple it is. There's only about 180 days per year where children are in school. But if you live in a medium-sized city, that's probably going to be 300,000, 500,000 people. You don't think you can find 180 people out of a half a million? They can come in and volunteer their time.
Absolutely.
We actually now are activating all of this knowledge that we have in America. You could be a real estate agent. What if the real estate agent had come to school when you were a kid and taught you how to buy a house? Why should we be learning that when we're actually in the process? I don't want my $100,000 on the line while I'm in this huge learning curve. But if you had a team of real estate agents that came in once a year, volunteered their time, walked you through the process, that would have been so interesting and so fun. If the dentist came in and told you, I'm an orthodontist, this is how that works. He's the citizen teacher for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You can still ask them to write a small paper or take a quiz on what they learned.
Mm-hmm.
But they're now actually interested in what's going on. Does all that make sense?
Absolutely. No, I love it.
Right.
It sounds fantastic.
So let me ask you some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Did I need to go to the legislature?
No, you didn't.
Did I need a bill passed at the governor's office?
No, you didn't.
Did I need to protest?
No, you didn't.
Did we just need to live our values?
Absolutely.
That's all it is.
And we just, you applied common sense to a very complex problem.
Right. It's not as complex as we think it is.
Right.
We've just made a decision about how we're going to have this battle.
Right.
And I'm saying,
by taking the wrong approach,
I'm not going to have that battle anymore. I'm going to go and ask people who tell me they believe in something. I'm going to say, prove that's what you believe in.
Right.
Now, a lot of people think, oh, I would love to be a teacher, but, you know, I can't afford it. You don't make enough money. And it just wasn't their passion full time. But one day a year or once a month, let's tap into that homeschool
market. Or once a week.
Once a week. Yes. I actually refer to this as Legos, because if you give people a box of Legos, anyone can make anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
So any school could use a different combination of those little building blocks. Some school might say, well, we bring in someone once a week. Someone else might say, we have 50% of our staff is actually volunteer staff. So everyone's going to come up with something different. I'm not here to take over someone else's school and tell them exactly how it needs to operate. I'm here to say, let's start bringing in some innovation and some new ideas and some efficiency into this model.
Right.
Just like I have a dollar menu when I go to a fast food restaurant, we need to start driving down the cost and making it cheaper and more interesting, more innovative, more effective, more efficient for someone to operate a school. So now when you graduate college, you may think, I want to open a school. Because this is not really something that people graduate thinking of as a business that they want to start.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that we need to transform the market, interject some entrepreneurial spirit into the education system and say, I want to start opening schools. I may want to have an all-boys school. Well, we can't have that in the public sector. But when we have a community, particularly the Black community, where they don't have a lot of fathers, it would be wonderful if these moms could say, I need to send my son to a school, an all-boys school, where he has a lot of male role models. Wouldn't you love it if some people came back from Afghanistan or Iraq and they were all military and they opened up a school and they said, we don't believe in ADD. I'm going to wear these little boys out. They're going to be climbing these ropes. They're going to be running through those tires.
That would be
day.
Excellent.
They will not be. They won't need that medication.
What I like about your model is that it's beneficiary to both sides.
Yes.
It's beneficiary to the operator of the school, absolutely, because it drives down costs. And as a result, it becomes affordable to the people in the community.
Right.
So it's attractive on both sides.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I like
so
that.
I'm not here to pick a fight with the left. If they want to fight me, we can fight. But if you're telling me the whole time I was on the left, it was all about the poor. It was all about helping the downtrodden. But the model that you were using to help, you were actually hurting.
Right.
So if you're big enough to admit that you were wrong, and if you look at the list of things that I had to admit that I was wrong on, it was devastating. But I'm over it. Get over it.
Right.
You're taking the wrong path. If this model is going to work better for more people, then why would you be against it? Then that tells me you really didn't mean the things that you were saying. There was really another agenda behind it. And I'm going to expose it if that's what was going on. So I'm hoping I'm inspiring both sides.
Let me ask you a question. What happened? What is that one thing that you can point to that caused you to question the validity of the left?
Well, for me, there was a trigger. And it was a supernatural. I had a supernatural encounter.
Mm-hmm.
I think based on where I was, that's what was going to be required.
Right.
I actually, really quickly, I was perfectly happy being an atheist. Actually, I thought my life was great. And from the outside, everybody would have thought that it was great. There was nothing that I really...
There was really no accountability.
There
at
was,
that point,
I had self-accountability.
Yeah, but
I was a person that believed.
But you didn't have to be accountable to a higher power.
No, I didn't have to be accountable to a higher power. But I did grow up going to church, so I did have self-restraint because that was what I was taught. It was built into my DNA.
Well, how were you so easily swayed?
Dumb as a rock, obviously. I think in my life, what I had been shown so far is that I sort of had this attraction to intellectualism.
Mm.
And on the left, they sort of worship intellectualism.
Mm.
It's the religion.
Right.
So you're really just transferring from one religion to another. And I didn't have a good enough understanding to be able to explain it or defend it. And this is sorely lacking in the church. If I go up to the average Christian and I ask them, well, how do you explain how Noah got all those animals on the ark? They can't explain that. And when I start getting challenged, I couldn't explain any of these things, so I thought it must not be real. So now that someone has been able to explain these things to me and they make perfect sense to me,
mm-hmm.
that's when you have to have this little heartbreak moment and admit that you were wrong. I mean, what are the chances?
Ravi Zacharias comes to mind.
Well, he's one of them.
He's a great Christian apologist. And
right.
He can answer a lot of questions.
Well, the power is really in a lot of the people who were former atheists.
Yeah.
And how they were willing to admit that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But in my particular case, what happened was I actually came home, just like everyone else, just going to watch some TV and chill. And I was going to watch a movie. The movie is called Love Comes Softly. Most of the ladies may have seen it. And it said right on the screen, Love Comes Softly. But that's not what came on. Another show came on. And the name of that show was I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. I thought that was the funniest title. So I said, I'm going to watch it. Over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, he really started challenging a lot of my worldview. He announced, I can prove the existence of God, and I don't have to use the Bible. So I said, go for it. Then he starts dismantling all of the scientific discoveries, how they're all pointing to God. Specifically, he said that Einstein had actually manipulated his general theory of relativity because he wasn't getting the answer that he wanted.
Wow.
And that the other scientific community had already agreed was the truth. So he just changed the theory. I thought, what? He's Einstein. So by then, I had actually grabbed a piece of paper and I started scribbling notes of everything that he was saying. By the time it was over, I was actually a little lightheaded. And that's when I heard a voice. And the voice said, you're being lied to.
Right.
So I'm not going to take up the whole time talking about that, but it just sent me on a journey and I started researching and everything started to unravel. And that's when I realized that I was wrong and that I had to change course.
Are you finding it difficult to get support for your education initiatives? What are the challenges?
No, I don't think that I'm going to have that much difficulty, actually. I just believe that once you start laying out something that is common sense, mm-hmm. people will start to respond to it. Now, there are always going to be people who have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And you know what you do with those people? You walk away from them.
Right.
And you go to the next person because it's not promised. Even Jesus told people, when you go into a town, if people don't receive you, kick the dust off of your sandals as you leave the threshold.
Keep it moving.
Keep it moving. So I'm going to keep it moving.
Absolutely.
Because plenty of people are going to think that this is a great idea, and their minds are going to start thinking in new ways. And they're going to start saying, you know that guy down there that's a barber? He's been in the community for 25 years. He'd be a great citizen teacher. Absolutely. Get him on your list. So literally every school would just need one coordinator. It might be that great parent that you have. It may be someone from that homeschool community. As I said, this is an opportunity for reconciliation. So when I left the left, I had that revenge thing in my heart. It still sort of drives me. And I remember thinking, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I said, for some reason, these leftists really hate the Tea Party. So I started going to Tea Party meetings. And I would sit in the back of the room and I would hear all of the great speeches. But at the end, you know what I would think? What's the plan? I would always say, what's the plan? What's the plan? Am I missing it? Because I don't see any instructions. No one was telling me anything that I needed to go and do. Well, I guarantee you, when I was with the ACLU, we were telling you what you needed to do.
Absolutely. The left is good about that.
Oh, yeah. We're in the Army now, and I can't have all of these privates acting like they're generals.
Since you walked away from the left, are they attacking you?
No. I'm not even really on there. Anybody?
Not even on the radar. Mm-hmm. Well, you will be once you start disrupting the educational system, because there's a lot of money there that you'll be causing them to miss out on.
Well, isn't this interesting? Because that's what everyone says. So then the same conservatives who tell me, what can we do to penetrate people? We're talking to minorities, we're talking to people, and we're trying to explain to them that the left doesn't have their best interests at heart. And I say, well, let's just say I go to Michelle and I say, you have a 5-year-old. Let's move them from this bad school system, which is clearly failing.
Mm-hmm.
Move them over to Pastor Jenkins' church-based school. We're going to drive that tuition cost down, and we think you're going to be able to afford it. And then the left gets activated and they start fighting her. What do you think she's going to feel as far as the left goes? Do you think she's going to feel like they have her best interests at heart?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I change her mind. I don't change her mind by talking to her. I change her mind by saying, well, let me show you. If they really have your best interest at heart, they're going to be happy for you that your child is getting a great education. But if you start coming under attack, you might want to change your voter registration.
Absolutely. And I think you're going to see a lot of that.
I am.
Because the left is the left, and they're not trying to abandon their ways anytime soon.
Right.
And doing what you do is going to help to expose them for who they actually are.
Right.
And then minorities, black people in particular, are going to begin to look like, wait a minute, as you said, they don't have my best interests at heart.
Right. So then we're going to have to up.
Which is a common theme with them.
Right.
They have done a great job at convincing us that they're all for us.
Absolutely. But, you know, we have to step up our game on both sides. So this
Absolutely.
Is an opportunity. Everybody's going to step up their game, and then we're going to start asking some real questions. I'm going to say to you, as the leftist, the former liberal, who's going to start coming up with reasons to challenge me. And I'm going to say, there are some people who were very interested in desegregating the schools, but do you support me owning the school? I'm going to say, you may be interested in desegregating the buses, but do you want to see me own the bus company?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to transition. Everybody wants to up.
And that's kind of a question you have for the right.
Correct.
You know.
Correct.
Let's see where your heart is.
Everybody. Because my loyalties are not going to be the
So everybody's going to be held to account.
Everybody's going to be held to account. Michelle's going to be held to account. Tyrone's going to be held to account. And the pastor's going to be held to account. Just like apparently I had to have this was not a pleasant unraveling.
Well, as far as the pastors are concerned, I think where you might get some resistance from them is as you introduce your model, which mm-hmm. is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say their revenue goes down, but they're able to more broadly impact the community.
Correct.
Are they willing to? Is that a good trade-off for them that they're willing to make? And that's going to show where their heart is.
Right. And it's all about exposure now. We're in a season of exposing. So apparently there's a saying in the church community, which I wasn't familiar with, and it says some were called, but some went. So I need to know which one you are. If you, this is your calling, then I'm going to be there to help you. We can start feeling out the conversation about, well, how do we maximize this? There's a revenue stream. It is education. You are providing a service. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this is supposed to be the love of money that was the problem. It mm-hmm. wasn't the money. Right. So are you loving the money?
Right.
Right. You don't want to be dating. You don't want to be marrying it. You're just
and then have to be creative and find some alternative revenue streams as it relates to what revenue they may have lost. For example, if you come in with your model and I'm a pastor and I have a school there in the community, and using your model is going to allow me to more broadly impact the community, bring in more kids, but my revenue is going to go down, then I have to say, well, maybe I own the vending rights.
Correct.
You know, and there's different things that you can be creative in order to replace that.
Absolutely.
Revenue. Yeah.
And those are the unknowns right now, but that's when the seed starts blossoming. And it's going to start blossoming. It's automatic.
Well, Lisa, we're going to wrap up, but if you would leave us with some words of wisdom, I think our audience would certainly appreciate that.
Well, one of the things that I want to do, I want to reach out to the audience. I want to ask them to join my contact list.
Mm-hmm.
So all they I need them to do is to text the word school choice. Mm-hmm. That's one word.
Mm-hmm.
Text it to 555-888, and they can join my contact list. And then the only thing that I can add is just to say that I want to have a revolutionary challenge to America's failing school system, and I want them to join me.
Lisa, certainly appreciate you being here with us today, and it's been a treat. And I think that our audience will be able to benefit from the information that you have disseminated here today. And that's why we are here, because we know that the mainstream media has no interest in disseminating what you have to say.
No.
And that's the service that I've provided for you today.
And that's what we have to do. Let's make our own media.
Absolutely. Thank you.